Well, welcome to Success Made to Last, and I'm Tim Moore. This is the podcast that helps you live the best version of you, where we interview people who live lives of excellence. Brought to you by Gracefully Yours. Today, our guest is Scott Miller, who has what sounds like one of the great jobs in the universe. He is the EVP of Thought Leadership at the iconic Franklin Covey Company. We'll explore with Scott what an EVP of Thought Leadership does, but I kind of think it probably involves strategy, development, and the publication of the Franklin Covey intellectual property stream, including books, and his very good podcast called Franklin Covey on Leadership with Scott Miller. I recommend it heartily, by the way, folks. And Scott is also the author of something called Management Mess to Leadership Success, Become the Leader You Would Follow, and is the co-author of the Wall Street Journal bestseller, Everyone Deserves a Great Manager, The Six Critical Practices for Leading a Team. So, Scott, welcome to the podcast.
Tim, my pleasure. Thank you for the invitation and the platform today.
Well, not at all. Listen, anybody's got a job that's a thought leadership of Franklin Covey is an instant friend of mine. So what does an EVP of thought leadership do? I mean, do you sit around the office in sort of the poses of Rodin's The Thinker, or what?
I think the CEO ponders the same question you just asked sometimes. You know.
I won't let him know, man.
Well, I will know too, because it might help my job. We hear a lot about thought leadership. It's kind of a cliche now. How I say it is, thought leadership is the new public relations. You know, gone are the days where you have PR professionals and company calling up newsrooms and pitching stories to reporters. Heck, there are no reporters in newsrooms anymore, right? The whole industry has changed. Thought leadership really is around articulating your expertise, your point of view. Whether you're a oil refiner or you're a food processor or you're a training company or you're, you know, into selling mechanical devices, you have expertise. You have a point of view. And thought leadership is around, you know, developing a mouthpiece to project your expertise out to the market specifically, not boil the ocean, but very specifically, who are those people out there that have problems that your expertise, your point of view, your service, your product can solve? And so my job is to make sure that Franklin Covey's expertise, which is generally around executing strategy, building a high-trust culture, developing leadership capability, improving your performance, your productivity, that our expertise after 40 years is made obvious to chief learning officers, vice presidents of training, CFOs, for that matter, the whole C-suite, anybody who's interested in developing a high-performance culture, changing the behaviors for the better of the people in their organization. So my job is to make sure that those dozen or so thought leaders in our company are writing the right books. They're being published in digital and print and audio format, that we're writing columns in Inc. magazine and Forbes and Fortune and HBR, that we're keynoting the right conferences, that people are on podcasts like the one today. And so my team that I lead of very competent editors and publishers and videographers and ghostwriters are out making sure that our point of view is being heard by those who care. That's my elevator pitch.
And as I said to you, your podcast is really, really good, and I'm sure a lot of people out there hear, you know, what you pitched as a PR statement. But I want to bring out one podcast in particular I think everybody should listen to, because it shows the power of the Franklin Covey message. And that's your podcast with Sean Covey on The Leader in Me. And it resonates particularly for me because Sean brought me down to that school in North Carolina. But it was magical. But even if I hadn't been there, that podcast really, really brings home to people how powerful what you all do out there is. It's not just another leadership company. It's a company that has, you know, some special sauce. And I wanted to make sure I said that, you know, early on, and I may say it again, in effect. So in any case, tell me.
Tim, thank you for that. You know, Dr. Covey passed 8 years ago. And
yes,
one of the principles that he has infused in our culture is an abundance mentality. So although we just taped our 100th podcast, only about a third of them are with Franklin Covey thought leaders. We deliberately go out and interview people from different industries, even competitors, because we want to provide our clients with a broad set of insights. We're not just trying to use the podcast to build our brand or to, you know, build our revenue. We hope it builds our brand and our revenue, but we want it to be an abundance resource. So I honor Sean for his interview and for Dr. Covey for his inculturating that as a value in our company.
Well, having been to your location numerous times, it's in the air, and you're very lucky to be able to work at a place like that, I think, at least. I was intrigued, though, Scott. I mean, maybe just out of curiosity here, but you were a Florida boy originally, and
correct, and
somehow you were central to the development and the building of Disney's Celebration Florida. And for those of you out there who don't know what Celebration Florida is, but it's a made from scratch complete city. God, Scott, talk about that. I mean, that's kind of fascinating. I've driven by Celebration Florida many times and thought to myself, well, that must have been an interesting project, but you were involved somehow.
I was. I can correct you. I'm sure I was not essential, but I was certainly there. So I was privileged. I was privileged to be tapped of one of about the first 40 people that were actually part of a company called the Celebration Company. And the Celebration Company was a subsidiary of the Disney Development Company, which is the real estate arm of the Walt Disney Company. So back in the early 90s, you know, Disney owned thousands of acres that were cow pastures.
Right.
I mean, we used to go out there in Chevy trucks and helicopters and chase the wild boar around all this land.
Right.
And here, you know, 5 years later, back in the late 90s, it became this thriving town of Celebration. It actually was Walt Disney's original idea of Epcot, you know, kind of the lifestyle of Mayberry meets the technology of the Jetsons, right?
I didn't know that.
Yep, they did a phenomenal job of building out this wonderful community that focused on five pillars. I can remember them: healthcare, technology, education, infrastructure, like, you know, place, like architecture, and community development. And so the Disney Company built homes and apartments and condos and schools and hospitals and religious, you know, buildings, and it's gone through an interesting machination, right? As you can imagine, every innovative project has critiques and haters, and it's been wildly successful from many angles and not so much from others, but it was an amazing opportunity to be in the ground floor of a brand and a company of people who are all about their guest. Whether you're buying a home or a balloon or cotton candy or a plush doll, whatever it was, I have great – they let me go. They asked me to leave because I was a little bit of a bull in a china shop. But to this day, I'm still friends with many of them, and it was an amazing, instructive opportunity for the rest of my career.
Oh, I imagine it was, particularly all that optimism that Disney seems to generate magically. My family and I have spent, more than 100 days on that property. So we do know something about that energy. And then somehow 20 or so years later, you're the keeper of the Covey IP flame. How does that happen?
You tell me, brother. I think here's what happened. I mean, my short story is Disney invited me to leave after 4 years. Great ride. Just young, immature, unprofessional, right? I mean, I think it was George W. Bush that said, in my earlier years or my young years, I was young and something or other, right? So I moved on.
Right.
There were some colleagues at the Franklin Covey Company, then, of course, you know, the Covey Leadership Center prior to the merger with Franklin Quest, that had consulted at Celebration, took a liking to me, saw something in myself that I didn't see in myself. They invited me to move out to Utah. So imagine a single Catholic boy in his 20s moving from Orlando, Florida, out to Provo, Utah, right? Fill in the blanks there. The only Catholics were the priest and me back in the day. And had an amazing ride. Been almost 25 years. Started as a frontline salesperson, selling our leadership solutions to universities and colleges. Did that for 3 or 4 years. Went to London for a year. Came back. Became the leader, the sales leader of the education division. Got humbled. I read a lot of stories in the book around how humbling that was. And what a tyrannical leader I was early on. And then I went to Chicago for 6 years as the general manager of a large corporate business group for the company, came back, became the company's first chief marketing officer for 8 years, moved over into thought leadership. I'm now hosting the world's largest podcast dedicated to leadership for the firm, authored a few books, got a few more coming. How did it happen? It happened in a combination of two things. A lot of hard work from me and about 9 pivotal leaders, because I've had 9 separate careers in the company over 25 years, 9 people who believed in me more than I believed in myself, had a vision for me, a lot of high courage conversations. Scott, do this, don't do that. Scott, stop saying that, start saying that. Scott, you cannot think that way. You got to think this way. And I owe it to Chuck and Charles and Paula. I owe it to Gary and David and Bill and Bob and Todd and Colleen. I mean, I can name them all along the way, people that really marshaled me along. And that's going to really help me in my next career, you know, someday outside the firm. I'll always be part of the family in some fashion, but I really give credit to those leaders who believed in me more than I understood at the time.
Well, that's a really good answer, and it's inspiring as well. You know, I used to publish, as I mentioned to you earlier, before we got on the air, that I used to publish business and self-improvement books. And I've been telling people for more than a couple of decades that, in my view, the best, the greatest self-improvement book ever written is The 7 Habits. For those of you in the audience who haven't read it, just go read it now, because it is about the thing that the title says, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Written cogently, it's clear. It's really a pathway to, you know, being successful, whatever you wish to define that as. Why do you think it's such a great book, Scott? And it, clearly, in, you know, everybody that works in your company, that the spirit of the 7 Habits inhabits them. No
yeah,
pun intended.
Yeah, no, I'd say a couple of things. Honestly, I think the book is not easily readable, right? I mean, it's not like it's an intellectual journey. It's a sophisticated philosophical journey. In some areas, it's practical. I don't think anybody says that was an easy book to read. I think what Dr. Covey did extremely well was he took common principles that govern human behavior. He'd researched extensively 100 years of what made people, quote, successful. And he dispelled some of the myths and confirmed some of the facts, and he wrote a book that organized, sequenced, and named principles that govern human behavior. And he turned those into 7 habits. And I think he went out and he evangelized it. No, you know, again, that's not other than just, you know, a corporate term now sometimes. He went out and he built a momentum over 30 years. The book has sold 40 million copies. It's the 30th year. Sean Covey just re-released a new version that has insights on each of the 7 habits. It's going to take the world by storm. And I think what Stephen did, like I said, was he really thoughtfully critiqued what endures over time. And he talked about the structure of the maturity continuum, right? And these first 3 habits are around mastery over yourself. The next 3 habits are mastery with others. And I think that sequence, not to mention, you know, coining some pithy terms. He didn't invent anything.
Right.
He'll tell you that. He popularized a lot of terms, right? First things first and paradigms and you know, big rocks. And I think he also was not a self-aggrandizing person. He liked to teach. He was not by nature consumed with the fame. He came home every night and was just dad to his parents, to his kids. Obviously, he knew he was a celebrity. And he earned a great living on that and became wildly famous and successful and wealthy. And at the end of the day, though, his legacy, I think, is his children and his grandchildren and his marriage and the influence that he had in our lives. It was successful for a lot of reasons, including, you know, back then, marketing books, as you know, is very different now. You know, how you market books now really is one way, social media. Right. Back then, right, you marketed books. There were no websites. There were no social media, right? It was direct mail, and it was publishers, and it was, you know, bookstores, you know, countless thousands of
signings.
Going
on the road, making
on
speeches.
The road.
Yep.
Totally.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he was willing to do that to some sacrifice, I'm sure. Thank you for asking that question.
Well, it's a great book. And, you know, I always like asking people at the Franklin Covey, well, it's really a sophomore question, but that's okay. And that is, if you have one, what's your favorite habit?
You know, can I share a concept?
Sure.
Yeah, this is less a habit and it's more a concept. Dr. Covey wrote the book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. He did not write the book, The Seven Habits of Highly Efficient People. And a lot of people mistake it and call it The Seven Habits of Highly Efficient People. No, those are very different concepts. So the big idea that I learned from Dr. Covey was when to be efficient and when to be effective. Tim, I'm a very efficient person. I get a lot done. I was up this morning at 5 a.m. reading a manuscript. I was on a conference call from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. On Saturdays, I'm up at 3 a.m. writing my books, writing my ink column, mowing the lawn, raking. I'm a very productive, list-making, efficient person. It's actually benefited me very well in some areas of my life. But like most people who are efficient, I transition that over to my relationships. And the concept that resonates most with me in the book is that you cannot be efficient with people. You can only be effective. Dr. Covey said, with people, slow is fast, and fast is slow. So the biggest life-changing experience is for me to put aside my natural tendency to do everything fast in life. With people, I got to slow down, turn off my phone, close my laptop, take off my glasses, close the door, and genuinely check in, including with my three young boys who are 6, 8, and 10. I find myself always saying, come on, guys, hurry up, let's go, let's go. No, why am I rushing the Saturday 2 o'clock ice cream parlor? What am I doing? Get home, check my Instagram? No, slow it down, Miller. Long answer, but I think it's great advice for those people like me that have achieved great success in a lot of areas of their life, and their natural tendency is to try to speed people up, right? And that hand signal we do with the motion, no, go faster. No, 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 no. Stop doing that. It's been a big lesson for me because a lot of my failures, a lot of my messes have come from trying to place that efficiency paradigm on relationships at work and in my personal life and with my wife.
That's a hell of a good answer. It resonates with me because I have a lot of the same, I should say I used to have. I'm in a different stage of life than I used to be in, right?
Yeah, sure.
But I used to have that same problem. You know, in fact, you know, one of the things that happens in my head is once I understand something, isn't everyone else supposed to understand it?
Well said.
And, you know, that's not how life works, is it? You know, so that's a great answer. It's really a great answer about how to think about being effective as well. And I think as Dr. Covey says too, you have to first understand to be understood. And if you're not slowing down, there will be no understanding. So that's a fabulous answer. Let's dip into your book, Management Mess. Give the audience a high level overview of that book.
Sure.
While answering the question, Scott, why in God's name does the world need another management leadership book?
Yeah, they needed one more. It was mine, Tim.
Okay, all right. Duh. No more after that.
Duh. So it's a great question, right? So like you, I had this podcast. I read a couple hundred leadership books a year. Franklin Covey's published 40 of our own. What I had found did not exist was a book that was raw, relatable, and real. That where you had a leader, by some measures I've had some success, that was in a leadership firm that found leadership to be really hard and sloppy and messy and often unrewarding and unrelenting. And so I wanted to write a book that was for people like me, that maybe they shouldn't be leaders of people, because I'm not sure everyone should be a leader of people.
Right.
And by the way, I'm a bit of a heretic in the leadership industry. And even our own company sometimes says, well, everyone's a leader. No, I'm sorry. Actually, you know what? I don't believe that. I don't believe everyone is a leader. I believe everyone can lead a project, their 401k, their own life, but I don't think everyone should be a leader of people. Philosophically, I just don't agree with that. I believe too often organizations promote individual producers who are the, you know, most efficient dental hygienist or the most creative digital designer or the top salesperson, naturally, they get promoted and they think their job is to turn everybody else into their clones. When no, your job is in fact to get results done with and through other people. Requires a whole different level of competency, requires patience, requires listening, requires you to care about other people, requires you to check your ego and not be jealous when someone gets promoted beyond you. And not everyone should be a leader of people, just like everyone shouldn't be an anesthesiologist. Everyone shouldn't be a corporate airline pilot, right? So I wanted to write a book that was from a guy in the leadership space to say, here's 30 challenges that you're going to face across your career. I've screwed up most of them. Here are some hilarious stories. Here are some, you know, shocking things I did and said. You know what? Learn from them. Don't fall into the same pitfall that I fell in. Because I believe as a leader, as a parent, as a neighbor, as a son-in-law, as a husband, when you own your mess, and by the way, everybody knows what your messes are. They're all talking about them. When you own your mess, you make it safe for others to own theirs. And when you make it safe for others to own theirs, not to license bad behavior or wallow in, no, right? You create a culture where it's vulnerable and it's fast and it's easy to talk about what it is you did wrong and how you're learning from it. Very few leaders gather their team together and say, you know what? I was a jerk in yesterday's meeting. I was impulsive. I was impetuous. I steamrolled over you all. I kind of had this complex of I'm always the smartest person in the room. It's clearly not true. I'm sorry. Would you – oh, my gosh. When is the last time your leader said that? Never. So that's why I wrote the book. I wrote it in an easy, breezy style. This book is not War and Peace. This book is not Good to Great. It's just a relatable book that has now sold close to 35,000 copies from a no-name offer in 6 months, and you know that's tapped a nerve. You don't sell 35,000 copies in 6 months without tapping a nerve. So I'm honored and humbled
by
it.
Well, particularly when two of those months are where there's no bookstores.
Well,
there's just Amazon. Having published books, 35,000 of anything in the book world is very, very good. And you have the platform to continue to drive that. For a second here, Scott, I'm going to pause us for a moment so that we can bring in our sponsor, Gracefully Yours. Okay, Scott, we're back. Would I say that your primary target audience for this book were young people in their first or my management job? Because when I read it, I kept thinking of all the mistakes I made when I was young. You know, as you're right, they promote doers, and then they don't tell us that we're supposed to have a new paradigm in our head, and we do lots of stupid stuff.
You know, this is going to sound like such a cliche. Tim, you are an expert in the publishing industry. We all know you have to have, to quote our friend Seth Godin, in mind the smallest viable market, right? What is the person's name that's going to buy your first book, right? Rachel Hollis, who's a friend of mine, she's a master at this, knowing who her market is. My market was broad. It was broad. It was people that were, you know, coming out of college. I'm surprised at how many professors are inviting me to teach one of their classes. I'm doing one a week.
Really?
Louisiana, Alaska, Florida. A lot of professors in undergraduate school that are teaching marketing classes, business classes, sales classes, leadership. They're inviting me into an hour because they want to equip their college students with these ideas. I'm teaching this course virtually and giving keynotes to large swaths of mid-level first-time leaders, middle management leaders. I think the principles are principles, right? These 30 challenges, I didn't invent them. I helped to collate and curate them across all of Franklin Covey's content. What are the things that people challenge and struggle with the most in leaders? You know what's interesting? You know who Rachel Hollis is? She wrote, you know, Girl, Wash Your Face, Girl, Stop Apologizing. Second best-selling author in all of 2019, next to Michelle Obama. I was one of the speakers on her stage last year to her Rise event in Charleston. 7,000 people. Very few of them worked for corporations. Most of them were side hustle moms, entrepreneurs, chiropractors, mental therapists, people owned, you know, nail salons, and primarily female, primarily in their 20s and 30s, not exclusively. They were eating it up because, you know what? Our marriages face the same challenges. We face the same challenges at Thanksgiving with our father-in-law or with our neighbor. These are interpersonal challenges, whether you are a formal leader or not. So I don't want to be so arrogant to say it's for everyone, but as I try desperately to find out who my people are, I don't know, because just when I think I've got a nuance, you know, you've got someone in Poland that wants to get on a webcast with 800 dentists, and then all of a sudden I'm invited to a conference down in, you know, Miami, where it's, you know, chief procurement officers, right? It's just, it's all over the place. There is no, I can't, after a year, even tell you. I think it's humans. Sorry for the arrogance.
Well, I mean, look, the answer's the answer. I mean, I don't have a preconceived notion what it ought to be. There are a lot, look, the book is very good, but there are some chapters, for whatever reason, maybe personal reasons, but there's some chapters to me that just jump out that just I want you to spend a little more time on. And the first one is maybe the one that jumps out the most for me. I'm a big believer in a book I've read four or five times by Carol Dweck called Mindset. And I don't know if you've read it.
Of course.
But I think it's a fundamental, you know, one of those fundamental books like The Seven Habits, you know, eight or 10 other books that you kind of have to read in your life. And, you know, she says there are basically two kinds of people, you know, those with abundance mentality and those with a scarcity mentality. And, you know, the ones with abundance mentality are the ones that, you know, get to live the great lives. to narrow that down to just a few words. But we talk about abundance mentality all the time in this podcast. I think it's the mindset of success. Elaborate on that or riff on it any way you'd like.
You know, this was one of those terms that I think Dr. Covey popularized but didn't necessarily invent. You know, he talked about having a scarce mindset or an abundance mindset, scarcity or abundance. This isn't necessarily about are you generous with your money to philanthropies or how much, right, you know, cash you put in the collection plate, or it's not that, although it includes that. It really is a mindset. Is do you believe there is enough to go around? Enough paper clips in the office, enough budget at allocation time, enough credit after a project. Do you believe there is enough? And I've struggled with this. I think I'm a naturally abundant person because of how I was raised by my mother and by my father's grandmother. These were generally very abundant people. So they worked on my mind. My grandmother, who passed away 20 years ago at the age of 97, my father's twin brother spent a full year in an iron lung during the polio epidemic. Timely, huh? And eventually succumbed to that. And I remember my grandmother, who was a widow. Her husband had died when her sons were 10. So here she is, two 16-year-old sons, one who gets polio, and she's stricken. She's on a widow's pension. My grandmother was Catholic. And the story goes that the Knights of Columbus, right, which still to this day is a very strong philanthropic organization worldwide, came to her house. Tim, I'm getting chills telling the story right now. Came to her house and offered to underwrite the cost of her son's, I'm getting emotional, of her son's iron lung. And my grandmother said, I can afford it. Go help someone else. I never met this uncle that died way before I was alive, but can you imagine in the 60s the horror that was going through people's lives, not knowing how you caught polio, and a widow with two sons, and one of them, She has a widow's pension. She said, I can afford this. Go help someone who can't afford it. I never gotten emotional telling that story. Maybe it's because of the pandemic that's going on right now, but I've never gotten emotional telling that story, but that's what's called an abundance mentality. That is, go help someone who I don't know, who needs it as much or more than I have. There was someone at Franklin Covey named Charles von Breuna. He was a leader of mine. He once said to me, Scott, you'll never have enough until you've defined how much is enough. And I love that thought because as a leader, how much credit do you need? How much more accolades do you need? Scott, how many awards more do you need, right? I've won enough trips to Maui. I've won all the president's clubs, all the chairman's club. Now it's your time to get someone else there. And so I write a fairly vulnerable story about me hoarding credit. And one of my employees who reported to me calling me on it. And read the book, share the story, but it's this abundance mentality will permeate your life into your quote, into Carol Dweck. It separates those who always live scarce, who always feel like they got to get theirs first, whether it's toilet paper, whether it's the vaccine, whether it's the bottled water, whether it's sunscreen, whether it's their share of the corporate budget at budgeting time, whether it's love, attention, accolades, credit, fame, you name it. Long answer, I apologize. Well, I'm sorry for getting emotional.
Well, that was a hell of a good riff there, Scott. I mean,
sorry. And I apologize to your listeners.
No, that's great stuff. And that's the joy of these podcasts and these long form shows. And you know that. You get to hear people really, really, really layer an answer. That was a great answer. So please don't apologize in the least. Fabulous answer. And I'd like to see if you can do it twice, Scott, because I really, really, really like the concept of carrying your own weather. And maybe I like it partly because I've become a devotee of Ryan Holiday's books.
Oh, yes. So Stillness is the key.
Stillness and ego is the obstacle. I think ego is the enemy. I think his best one is, for me at least, is The Obstacle is the Way. But in any case, I get his Daily Stoic every day, blah, 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 blah. But I think that, this concept, that you hear athletes talking about all the time of controlling only that which you can control is very similar to carrying your own weather. Again, riff, and correct me if you think I'm wrong in some way.
No, I think you're very wise. Have you interviewed Ryan Holiday?
No, I haven't. Sure would love to. He's an Austinite. I mean, he's like one of my, like intellectual heroes.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, I have had the privilege to interview him. So if I can build a bridge to him for you.
And I listened to it. Yes,
oh, thanks. Well, you might do a better job than me, but I'd be happy to build a bridge to him if you want to interview him. Let me know. Challenge, I'll deliver to you. The first challenge, challenge two, was think abundantly, we discussed. The sixth challenge in the book of the 30 challenges is carry your own weather. Again, a term popularized by Dr. Covey. I just talked about it in my book. I suck at it. This is a tough challenge for me. I'm a very reactive person. I don't lose my cool a lot, but I have flashpoint. I have a short fuse, right? I don't curse and scream at people. I'm sure I have. Not my natural go-to. I think one of the things that I have, after 30 years in the leadership business, realized is that some of the most influential people I know, formal or informal leadership, are those people who self-regulate their emotions very carefully. It doesn't mean that they're always calm or that they're just super shy or low-key. These are very successful people that have earned lots of money and, hired lots of people and fired lots of people and sold lots of businesses and bought lots of businesses and renegotiated a lot of debt, right? And, not all great. Gone bankrupt a few times. These people self-regulate. They calibrate their emotions very carefully. This concept of carrying your own weather is based on people that choose their responses based on their values are not subject to other people's tirades, personalities, circumstances. Here's my short story. Dr. Covey wrote a lot about your personal mission statement. The Franklin Covey website, the most trafficked site, is creating your own personal mission statement. Tim, I'm 51. I was married at 41. I've never developed a personal mission statement. It never resonated with me. I'm like, at 41, I was single. What's my personal mission? I don't know. Go to Italy again for the 10th time? Drink more champagne? Buy my 7th tennis racket? I have no idea what my personal mission is. I don't know. Right? I'm single. I'm living the life. Personal mission. I have no idea. I couldn't stand people who knew their mission in life. I'm a sufficiently religious person, right? But I have no idea. Then I got married, had three kids. I'm increasingly clear on what my mission is. But our other co-founder, who might be less well-known, was Hiram Smith. He was a man of enormous impact, success, fame, and wealth. He invented the Franklin Planner and the Franklin Planning process. It was his company, Franklin Quest, that bought Stephen Covey's company. We hear it as a merger. It was actually an acquisition. Don't tell anybody I said that. Hiram Smith, who passed away 6 months ago from a very short bout of cancer in the pancreas, gave a speech once that I went to where he talked about clarifying your values. And I'd heard that a lot, you know, world peace, harmony, what are your values? But he really spoke to me, and I went home that day and I clarified my values over the course of about a week. I came out with PhilPal, PhilPal, purpose, health, integrity, loyalty, positivity, abundance, and learning. And for a decade plus now, 15 years, these are my values. Purpose, health, integrity, loyalty, positivity, abundance, and learning. I'm very clear on them, and I try to make all of my decisions and run all my reactions through these values. So the reason I went on that long riff was because I don't think you can carry your own weather unless you have identified your values. And by the way, your values ought to be probably the same today as they are next week at a cocktail party or a baseball game or in a negotiating meeting or at a funeral or at a wedding, right? You will not give up your emotional well-being to other people if you are clear on your values. The best way to watch this is when you see a fender bender. And you see how people get out of their cars and they react to each other. Are you okay? Yeah. Am I okay? Yes, thanks. Is your car okay? Yeah, you know what? Let's exchange numbers, right? I've seen people have fender benders that go bat you know what crazy. And just look over there. It's like road rage, right? We've all been there a little bit. Carry your own weather means you never give your emotional well-being over to someone else because you're clear on your values.
Yeah, that's another great answer, Scott, and a fabulous answer with, by the way, a really good little story in the middle, because no book or no conversation or no idea should be expounded without a story, because that's how you remember, right? Scott, I want to ask you one more question. You know, we're running up against, what I think is a kind of the limit. I don't like to go beyond 45 minutes. I think that's the, sweet spot for most listeners, but I wanted to give you the opportunity to talk a little bit about any other Franklin Covey piece of intellectual property that you think is really, really something that someone should read. And I have a feeling I know where you're going to go, but why don't you go where you want to go as opposed to where I think you're going to go?
Well, I mean, there's so many principles. You know, I think one that I'm most passionate about is declaring your intent. One of our co-founders, Dr. Blaine Lee, said something I think is prophetic, is profound. He said, nearly all, if not all, conflict in life comes from mismatched or unfulfilled expectations. I'd like to repeat it. Nearly all, if not all, conflict in life comes from mismatched or unfulfilled expectations. I might ask your listeners, think about where you have any conflict in your life, with your boss, with the handyman, with the caterer, with a colleague, an ex-spouse, a child. Is that because that you don't have mutual expectations? Have you declared your intent? Because my intent is to help you build a great career here at Franklin Covey. I want you to be successful. And Tim, I'm seeing some behaviors in you that I fear if they continue, they actually might result in you being asked to leave. I've declared my intent. Talk about it where you've got conflict, where the quote for taking down the 16 of the other person as well.
That reminds me of your conversations with Stephen M. R. Covey about the speed of trust as well. I think declaring your intent is
yes. It's one of his 13
first behaviors. Of the behaviors, right?
That's right. Yeah. You're exactly right. I co-opted that with his permission, but you're absolutely right. Yeah.
Well, I tell you, I've had a great time, Scott. This is this is fabulous stuff. I love listening to people who have really thought about how to live, you know, the best version of themselves. And I'm sure you know it, but you're a very lucky person to be out there with really some very, very first class human beings in that corporation, and some first class thinking. And I'd please say hello to Scott for me. Sean for me.
Thank you. Yeah. I'll make the introduction to Ryan Holiday for you. Okay.
I'd love for you to do that because I mean, it's a joy to talk to people that, you know, have something worth listening to. I don't have, you know, I already know what I know. So I'm happy
well
to
said.
Learn that other people
I,
know.
Can I quote
you
on that? Hold on, sorry. Yes. I gotta co-opt that. I already know what I know. So teach me something better, right? I love that. Okay.
Well, you know, it's funny. You talk about, you know, some transitions that occur in your life. You know, for you, it was 41, you know, but I somewhere in my late 30s or 40s, I had to consciously stop trying to be the smartest guy in the room and start being the guy who listens and finds out from the other smart people in the room. And you know, that partly, you know, it's how we're bred in schools, you know, to be excellent and all, but, you know, so you wake up one day and you go, man, these people are much more interesting than me. Why am I doing all the talking? So, I think publishing books helped an awful lot with that because you got to talk to people all over the world who were great at what they did. And, so you learn, you know what? I already know what I already know. So, Scott, where can people find more about you, Franklin Covey, your books, and anything else you want people to buy or experience?
Well, my wife says it's hard not to find me, and that wasn't a compliment from her. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Scott Miller, Franklin Covey, Instagram, Facebook. I'd love to have your listeners follow me and connect on LinkedIn. Of course, you can Google me, find me at franklincovey.com. You can subscribe to our podcast called On Leadership. It comes out every Tuesday. There's also a site for the book called managementmess.com. You can buy the book at any major retailer and online as well, too. So, Tim, I appreciate the conversation today.
Well, I appreciate the conversation, too, because it takes two to tango, doesn't it? And thank you very much. Everybody out there, as I said earlier, I think you'll enjoy Scott's podcast. Scott does a great job of bringing great guests on, asking them the right questions, and then getting out of the way. So I hope you've all enjoyed this out there in podcast land. Remember to go to successmadetolast.com to register for our newsletter, filled with fun information, or at least I think it's fun, about our future guests and great stuff in general. And go to your podcast distributor, iTunes, Breaker, et cetera, and please rate our show. Till next time, go out there and live the best version of you. And thank you, Scott.
My pleasure, Tim. Thank you. Stay safe.
So thanks to our sponsor, Edward Jones. They are our trusted financial advisor. And Edward Jones has been instrumental in helping us pivot our lives built around health, happiness, travel, and adding value to other people's lives. You can contact our advisor, Serban Marasini, by emailing him at serban.marasini@edwardjones.com. And thanks again to their sponsorship of this program.